Scott, how did you get involved and start observing how surveillance technologies like cameras, radio frequency ID readers, anything that seems kind of big brothery? When did you start seeing those things evolve in your neck of the woods?
Well, down on the border, there've been surveillance cameras in particular for years and years now. If you go down Military Highway, which parallels the river, you see on water towers and towers that are specially erected for that, cameras that are aimed at the border that the Border Patrol has been using to try to, keep an eye on who's coming across. You also, if you go into some of the wildlife refuges, they have ground sensors, motion sensors, little kind of electric eye tripwire type things to let them know, if anybody's passing through. So it's been sort of a part of life down here for many, many years.
So, when did you start seeing those things?
They've been down here. Basically, what's been happening is there's been an increase in them over the last few years. They've been down here for quite a while. In the last couple of years, they've become a lot more obvious. They've just, Homeland Security has been getting a lot of money to put these kind of things in. It's a little bit of an extension of the program that's going on in Arizona, where you have what's called the Secure Border Initiative Net, which is Boeing getting paid millions of dollars to set up what they're calling a virtual fence, which apparently doesn't work very good, but they're still going to get millions of dollars more to extend that. They just got $100 million in the stimulus plan for virtual fencing technology, although they don't define exactly what kind that's going to be, whether it's going to be cameras or chips or anything else. The fact that they made one failed project apparently doesn't exclude them from getting more money to make more.
So that concurs with our findings that the radio frequency ID technology was already a failure at the border in the U.S. visit program. From talking to legislators here at the Capitol, I'm not going to name names right now in case they change their tune, because we like being optimists. But we don't have the money to continue to go in this direction, and people have to pick and choose what they want to pay for. At this time, they've already decided that radio frequency ID readers don't work, or at least the chip technology isn't going to work across the border for what they intend it to be used for. Now, passport cards and those sorts of things, they may work. They're still the same technology, but they've taken pains to make them at least a little bit more secure, according to privacy author and expert Catherine Albright. They're just a little bit more secure, not much, but you don't carry your passport with you everywhere you go. Our beef with radio frequency ID is that it leaves a record of what you've done and where you've been, and you are basically able to be tracked like UPS tracks a package. You can see the history of where you've been because of the nature of the chip. It reads information from wherever you are. Having said that, we've noticed and gotten reports that radio frequency ID readers, like the reader technologies, are popping up at the border and throughout the state, and they just popped up. There was no notice. And where do they get the budget if nobody's asking any questions? They just, crop up one day. So
Well, I mean, they haven't had any problems getting funds from Congress. So far for the border wall in general, both for the physical border wall as opposed to the virtual border wall, they've had $3.1 billion allocated. Last October, they had spent their full $2.7 billion allocation, and they said we're going to run out of money if we don't get another $400 million reprogrammed over to us, and Congress immediately gave them that cash. So, all they have to do is cry up border security and, do things like are happening right now, where they're saying, oh, there's going to be this tremendous spillover of violence. Although I can tell you, I live 5 miles from the border, and I'm not seeing a tremendous spillover of violence into the U.S. But as long as they've got that boogeyman, DHS has no problems getting money. The money will just keep flowing. It doesn't matter how bad the economy is or how cash-strapped the rest of the government is.
Well, that's definitely something in Central Texas citizens to be worried about, because that can become a problem for them in the future, especially where privacy and identity security is involved. And after a while, this technology, or some of these technologies, the biometrics, it becomes a reckless endangerment issue. We feel, you know, regardless of my opinions, the spending is what's problematic. What do you know about border cities? They have to go through the towns and the cities to get this done. How are they doing it, and why are the cities being mum about it?
Well, I mean, they're not asking for input from any of the border communities, and that's been a big kind of flashpoint down here. They don't, when they're building the wall, when they're putting up cameras, when they're doing any of these kind of projects that fit under either, you know, the Secure Fence Act or the Secure Border Initiative, they don't bother to ask for public input. They just do it. And part of the reason they can get away with doing that is because of the Real ID Act that was written in 2005. And the Real ID Act, along with, you know, actually affecting identification cards, which is what the act is named for, there was one clause in there that gave the Secretary of Homeland Security the power to waive any law that person saw fit, you know, and when Secretary Chertoff was in charge last April, he waived 36 federal laws, and in that waiver, he also said that he was waiving all state and local laws that pertain to the subjects of those laws. So he waived the Clean Water Act. He's also waiving every other law related to water. And if you are a municipality and you don't like what Homeland Security is doing on the border, there's not much you can do about it. You know, you can, if you fight in court and you find a law that Homeland Security is in violation of, and you say you need to stop doing that because you're violating this law, Homeland Security can just turn around and waive that law. That, I mean, a year before the big waiver, where Chertoff waived 36 laws, they got sued in Arizona. The court told them to stop construction of the wall there. They waived the laws, and the lawsuit was tossed out of court. So knowing that, municipalities tend to just kind of give up. You know, you see that in Hidalgo County down here. Judge J.D. Salinas basically capitulated to Homeland Security, and instead of putting up a fight, tried to cut a deal because he felt like he didn't have any power in the situation. And in Hidalgo County, the county is paying $44 million of the cost of building border walls.
Why are they doing that?
They were basically, the original route for the wall was going to go through a bunch of people's homes. You know, especially in the town of Gran Hino, you were going to have people's houses bulldozed to put the border wall in. So Salinas cut a deal that put the wall in the existing flood control levees. That ramped the price up. Instead of the walls costing about $5 million a mile, they cost $12 million a mile to build. And Salinas felt like he was getting a little bit of a flood control measure. So he felt like that was the best deal he could get, given the legal situation. Our group's position is that he should have continued to fight. He shouldn't have given up that easily. But his feeling was that was the best he could do. You know, basically he has to hope for the grace of DHS rather than forcing DHS to obey our nation's laws.
Yeah, DHS seems to think it's outside of the law. And that's one of the problems with that philosophy of that agency, is that, you know, there's a kind of a carte blanche for anything that comes under national security. And that's just going to get abused, like it's already being abused. So
I mean, they are outside the law, so, you know, that feeling is pretty valid on their part. So
what I'm understanding here is that DHS can come in to a town, your town, Central Texas, Austin, make demands on the basis of national security, and then, you know, put up their technologies, and then ask for the money later.
From the money standpoint, yeah. I mean, as far as waiving laws Real ID specifies the border area, but once you've got that precedent, you could just make slight changes and say, well, you know, if it's national security on the border, it can be national security anywhere. It could be airports. It could be port cities like Houston. It could be any place. So we'll just expand that power a little bit. Once you've established the validity of that power, you can use it anywhere. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the money is concerned, they've had no problem getting the money out of Congress because Congress is just too scared to be branded as not being in favor of national security. You know, the whole Secure Fence Act was basically nothing more than a political prop so that conservatives could make their political opponents look soft on national security, and the Secure Fence Act passed 2 weeks before the 2006 midterm election because that's all it was. It didn't have anything to do with actual security. It hasn't brought any actual security. If you look at the statistics of apprehensions from between 2005 and 2007, the places that have walls, like San Diego, saw a 20% increase in people coming across. Rio Grande Valley in southern Texas saw a 45% decrease with no walls. And the walls don't stop anybody. The virtual stuff, the cameras and all those projects, they don't even work, much less stop anybody. They can't even get a decent signal to show up on the computer screen in their cars. So the whole project is just, it's a political prop, and it's a lot of money being funneled into Boeing.
Okay, so who are the leading big baddies as far as corporates and corporatized contracts on this? Who's getting the money?
Boeing is probably the top. They're getting $993 million as of August. And then you have other big military contractors like that are making big money. And, you know, one thing to keep in mind with that is that Congressman Waxman found that the majority of people that are doing the oversight of these contracts are contractors themselves, not federal employees. And a number of those were found to have significant conflicts of interest. So, you know, basically the contractors are overseeing the contractors, and no surprise, they recommend more contracts.
Yeah, that concurs. So if you live in Texas, what would you recommend that somebody does if one of these cameras, whether it's a ARFID reader or just a general surveillance camera, just pops up in their backyard, what kind of questions should they start asking?
Oh, well, they should certainly ask, you know, who's aiming that camera, what the point of it is, where the, you know, where the images from that are going to go, and what protections they have. And our experience down on the border has been that Homeland Security doesn't really feel the need to give them any answers, but they should certainly ask those questions, and they should certainly push for their elected representatives to be asking those questions. You know, you can't, it's very difficult as an individual to try to get those answers because Homeland Security has no qualms about ignoring your requests. It's a little tougher for Homeland Security to ignore questions from Congress.
Okay, so if, so the strategy here is, okay, if it's a federal agency, even if it's sitting squarely in the state of Texas, is to go to the federal agency and go to your federal representatives and make it their problem. Go to Lloyd Doggett. Go to your federal representatives. Go to Ron Paul, if you're living in another part of Texas. Go to those people and say, look, this is really overkill. I have no say-so whether or not there's a surveillance apparatus staring down at me when I go to ride my bike to the corner store.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's what representatives are supposed to be there for. They don't necessarily always do their jobs with their constituents' best interests in mind, but they should. You know, that's their job. That's what they get paid for. So they should be pressured to do that.
So that's the appropriate thing to do. What else can people do? Can they single out these the locations of the contractors and kind of send them nasty letters and make it their problem? Because this is our tax money. It comes out of our hide.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that is one strategy, although I would suspect that for Boeing, they're not going to be that concerned about it. As long as they're getting their check, they don't really care what people think of them. You know, I think in making it Congress's problem, because Congress is the ones that that's who is paying for these things. That's who is authorizing these things. Congress should be rescinding Real ID. They should have seen that as unconstitutional a long time ago and pulled it back on it. And also Secretary Napolitano. You know, she has been put into that job to make a change from the policies of Secretary Chertoff. She needs to go ahead and do that. She needs to start taking people's civil rights into account and not doing as Chertoff did and just, you know, rolling over people.
What do you think about, because this DHS thing is an invention of the Bush era.
Mm-hmm.
It is a post-9/11 debacle. I don't think it's actually brought national security to a better place. Everybody just loves the TSA. They love the fact that they're being watched. They love the fact that everything that they're going to be doing may wind up in some sort of manipulative checkpoint situation. You know, as Americans, we just don't really need our freedom, do we?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also particularly easy for people to give away other people's freedoms. You know, if you are a member of Congress from the Midwest, it's very easy to say, well, you know, we need to sacrifice the freedoms of people in Texas to keep us safe. You know, so Peter King of New York has the boogeyman at the southern border, and he uses that to tell people in New York that he's keeping them safe. And it's not costing them anything aside from tax dollars. It's costing us something. We're the ones who are losing our civil rights.
Yeah, I'm going to go there. We have about, you know, 2.5 minutes left, but I want to say that some of the border violence, I think, is contrived. I think it's actual violence. I think it's actually happening. But do I think that there are people that are agitating it and creating it so that it's more of an issue than it ordinarily would be for political reasons? I do. Can I prove it? Not really. But I think that is how things get done if you are a dirtbag in politics who wants surveillance cameras at the border. Okay, you have to find some sort of reason to present to the general public so that you can get a congressional green light and take the money.
And you see that, you know, with the statements of Governor Perry and Senator Cornyn recently saying that we need to have troops on the border. You know, they're concern, their stated concern at least, is that there's going to be all this spillover violence from Mexico. Well, you know, Juarez is tremendously violent, but El Paso, just across the bridge from Juarez, is the third safest large city in the United States, according to FBI statistics. So the spillover thing is contrived. I mean, there is actual violence in Mexico, but it's in Mexico. It's, you know, Mexican gangs and smugglers fighting among themselves. And they don't really have a good reason to come over to the United States. It's not just, you know, people that feel the need to fire an AK around a city for no good reason. They're targeting each other. And, you know, we should help Mexico to deal with that. But, you know, putting up a wall and sending troops down to the border isn't going to have any effect on what's going on in Mexico, and it's not going to make us any safer.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much room for debate. For foreign policy on this. My thought here is that what's actually happening is that Americans are being surveilled. Americans are being hemmed in. And if this was making us actually safer, I'd say, all right. But the proof is really in the pudding. And it's not brought us further. It's not making change. We're not getting progress. We're fattening up Boeing and Arfid contractors and, you know, people who are into big technologies, but that's about all that's happening. And go ahead.
It's the case too. It's you know, it's the same thing as with warrantless wiretapping. You know, you have the stated goal of intercepting all of, you know, whatever terrorist communications are out there, but as far as the actual result, it's not doing anything to make anybody safer. It's basically making it so that the people who are having to sift through all that information are so overwhelmed that they can't translate the real stuff, and they can't put their time towards, you know, addressing real threats. And it's again, it's one of those, let's just overdo it to the point that it becomes totally useless. You know, let's build massive infrastructure that does nothing and costs huge amounts of money when we could be using that money for something real. Let's do SBI net out in the desert in Arizona. That's a complete failure. And then pay the exact same company to keep doing the exact same project. It makes no sense. But it's because it's a fake response to an inflated or an imagined threat.
So what they call a false flag.
Mm-hmm.
That's terminology that's not favored by the general public, but it has a meaning, and basically that is that, you know, we're going to contrive a violent situation or agitate a violent situation so that there is a military response that is appropriate to the agitated situation, and you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
So, let me get into Hidalgo County before we leave off here. Hidalgo County cashed out how much money, and have they been paid back?
$44 million, and they're not going to get a dime of it back. Senator Cornyn keeps telling Judge Salinas that he's going to introduce a bill to get the county reimbursed, and he introduces the bill, and everybody else in Congress says, "Why should we pay to reimburse you guys for that?" And so it hasn't happened, and I doubt that it ever will. So the taxpayers of Hidalgo County are on the hook for $44 million worth of border wall.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds about like the dog and pony show that happened here in Austin recently, where the cameras came first. Everybody started looking around and going, "Why are these cameras here? Where is the money coming from? How did they get paid for?" And then close to a month later, there was a cosmetic public input where they green light this $800,000 federal grant, you know, for cameras for the city. And everybody moves on with their lives, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, any public input that came about down here was purely cosmetic. It was not a matter of asking communities what they think, what they want to do, what they want to pay for. It was saying, here is what we are going to do. You don't like it, too bad. And so there have been what they wanted to call open house meetings, but, you know, again, there was nobody there who could, they would take your written comments. But that doesn't mean that your written comments would change anything. And you pretty well knew going in that they weren't going to change anything. So there's no, you know, what's the point of public input if the public doesn't get to make any adjustment to the plans?
Hmm. The cost of national security is important. And it's overkill. The people don't need that much security. And just relying on that end of doing things will create an economy where it's based on militarism, which, you know, when there's too much security, that, I'm sorry, is a recipe for fascism. You have to ask permission to do things that you ordinarily would normally be able to do with or without government input, like shop or, repair your furniture, fill in the blank. But soon you'll need to have the appropriate identification to get through checkpoints or wherever you need to go to take care of your personal business. And that, unfortunately, is just too much security. And we don't need to pay for it just because corporations have public entitlements, public-private entitlements. And so what's your plan to deal with the technologies at the border right now?
Only thing I've heard is the plan is to expand it. You know, I don't think that there's not much public input that I've heard regarding it. When they've talked about the physical solid wall, they haven't talked about the virtual wall down here. At least they've had some cosmetic public input up in Arizona, but in Texas, nothing that I'm aware of. And, you know, I think that probably they figure they can ramp that up as high as they want because people are so upset about the physical wall that they're not focusing on the surveillance stuff. You know, if your house and your property is in the path of the physical wall and you're threatened with condemnation, you'd much rather have a camera aimed at you than have a bulldozer go through your land. So people aren't, you know, they're just not as focused on it because it's not as immediate, and the destruction is not as visceral, and the impact, in theory at least, wouldn't be as bad. But
so if it's, it wouldn't be advisable for people to go up out there and without any. If a camera pops up in your backyard, the reason why we can't go out there with a sledgehammer and smash it to bits is because it's federal property. Is that right?
Yeah, I would assume so, yeah. If the feds put it up, it's their property, and I imagine that they would prosecute you for damaging their property.
So we can't go out there and vandalize it, but what we can do is we can go to our federal representatives and the federal government and people, and if we have to go outside of the state, let's go outside of the state. There are people who feel strongly about this issue. They're not all alike. All of them are on different types of planes on these issues. The climate is ripe for change and for dealing, you know, appropriately. I think we've got a much more reasonable person in the seat for Department of Homeland Security, although I really don't like the fact that she's rebranding the Real ID so that the, you know, Harvard contractors still get a cut, you know, with this enhanced driver's license, because that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that the tech contractors, you know, don't get some sort of consolation prize when they go home. So I'm go ahead.
We're in sort of a hopeful time, but there's no guarantee. So hope if we push enough, there's a better chance now than there was under Bush, but we have to push. I mean, I think that's the key thing. If we're quiet, then we're just, the same thing is going to continue. There's no, you know, there's no reason. Entropy will demand that the walls keep getting built, the cameras keep going up, and things, you know, continue on the same course unless we fight, unless we stand up and make a change happen.
Okay, so we've got a great legislative session going on right now. We understand how spoiled our legislators can be with the lack of attention that we have given them, and they've been able to just do whatever they want with no public input. So the burden is now on you, Texas, to get out there and to basically make it their problem. If it's your problem, make it their problem. If you don't like something, go to their office. You pay them. They're on your dime. They're there to serve you. Be respectful. You know, be understanding, you know, and try to find out what their position is on these issues and see what they can do for you.